can we do to mention the reality of what it is today, as opposed to the propaganda that they're doing?
You know, you just quite correctly mentioned that some people with anti-Russian sentiments, of course, they have the right to have their own opinion.
Of course.
And we cannot impose by force our opinion. They have their understanding, we have their understanding, and the best way is to meet with each other and discuss.
Yes.
Discuss. But it was in the history, in the past.
Exactly.
We can't live only with these thoughts which are connecting to the past. We must look in the future, to the future, but and to the nowadays, what's going on. And you know, in terms of JCPOA, we always were standing with Iran. And right now, do you remember this resolution, anti-Iranian resolution,
yes,
condemning
in the,
Iran,
in the
which was quite unnecessary.
Yes.
It was a very wrong decision, and who voted against? Russia and China.
Exactly.
That's my question is to those anti-Russian people. Why do you keep silence?
Of course.
Please,
yes.
Tell something. And we will continue to support our Iranian friends to get out of the deadlock. But now we cannot mediate between Iranians and Americans like it was before. Now we don't have contact with
because
them.
Because the Americans cut
the Europeans,
it.
Yeah, they cut. But anyway, it's not...
Ambassador Ulyanov was...
Very fruitful,
yes.
Very useful. And we sincerely try to be helpful. That's why I'm very, very sorry that they don't want to accept it. They don't want to accept
it. They don't want to accept the reality of what it is.
Yes,
they're stuck in the past, like you said,
And yeah, they are under huge influence of this anti-Iranian radio, like I mentioned, BBC Farsi.
Yes.
My best regards to them. Radio Dirus, best regards to them.
Yes.
Iran International. The fabrics who just, create or produce fake news.
They're lying.
Yeah.
It's lies.
Yeah, and lying. And because, you know, my president said that Americans managed to create a huge, huge empire of lies.
Yes, yes, I read. Yes. That's what it is.
And they continue to lie, and it's very counterproductive.
I think this goes back to what you were talking about in terms of the Europeans not defending their pragmatic interests. So,
sorry, unfortunately.
So we see the same thing maybe in Iran and Russia sometimes, that there are pragmatic interests. It's in the real interests of Iran and Russia. And people forget, Iran and Russia are neighbors. They're not.
Yes.
It's not like Russia is not the other side of the world. So we have the Caspian Sea between us, but we're neighbors in terms of maritime neighbors. We have, you know, how far is it from Anzali to Astrakhan? It's not that far. We can do a lot of things there. We have the corridor going. So it's in our interest to, particularly given the hostility that we're experiencing, and this irrational hostility. It's not something that you can say, okay, you know, we can understand everybody has their own interest. It's this, like I said, I believe it's this essential, being essentially against the existence of these two.
But we need some more opportunities here in Iran.
Right.
To conduct our activity in cultural level.
You know, Mr. Master, we're not worried about upsetting anyone.
Yes.
Please tell us if you feel that there's...
A few days ago, four ladies, young ladies, students, came to our embassy. The ladies who learned Russian language, who like Russian literature, Russian poems, I gave them, handed over diplomas. And during our National Day, you just quite correctly mentioned Mrs. Marzieh Yahyapur came here, and we asked our president to reward her with the Medal of Pushkin. Mm-hmm. President Putin signed a decree, and she was rewarded this Medal Pushkin. And for me, it was a big honor to hand it over to her in presence of Mr. OG, Minister of Oil, and he's a co-chairperson of our Joint Economic Commission. So we have a lot of friends here. But we need some other opportunities. We don't have cultural center, and the agreement...
Just to explain for our audience. So countries have cultural centers in different countries.
Yes, yes, yes.
So Iran has a cultural center in...
Not only one, but they have in Moscow and some other cities have the opportunity to conduct very important, very fruitful cultural activity to spread a Persian language, which is very popular in the Russian Federation. Because, you know, all my staff members in Iran, in General Consulate in Isfahan, in Rasht, at the embassy, almost all of them, they have well command in Persian language, which is very important.
Of course.
Very important.
Yes.
It makes our job very easier.
Exactly.
And we also, last year in April, my Minister Lavrov and Mr. Zarif, former foreign minister, signed an agreement about the conditions of activity of our cultural centers. And we just would like to ask estimate Iranian Majlis to ratify.
So we're waiting for Majlis to ratify.
Yes, 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 yes.
Any other things that you think that we should maybe other issues from the Russian perspective that you feel are some things that you would want the Iranians to maybe.
You know, before 2018, a lot of Iranians visited Russian Federation, mm-hmm. especially 2018, COP World, when
yes.
Iranian team
yes.
participated.
Yes, yes.
And they managed to visit different Russian cities, even Saransk,
yes.
in Mordovia, St. Petersburg, Kazan, and so on. I would like to see more Iranians in the Russian Federation. I
so
would like
tourism
to see,
in
yes,
terms of...
Yes, yes. I would
what
like
about
to see,
Russians coming here?
Yeah, also to see a lot of Russians to come to Iran.
Because, you know, Iran is a very culturally...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because Iran can never really be a substitute for some of the European countries or others because we have our own culture, we have our own...
We have no...
But in terms of culture and in terms of family trips and in terms of a family vacation...
Right now, Europe is closed for Russian tourists.
Exactly.
Fortunately.
Yes. For us also, it's
yes,
better.
Yes, yes. If they don't want to accept Russian tourists, it's up to them. It's also, they damage their own interests. That's why our tourists will go to the east. Inside Russia, CIS countries, Iran, China, India, Emirates.
Mr. Ambassador, we don't have a lot of time, but just one issue that I hear sometimes from some Iranian side talking about. They're talking yeah. about that the port facilities in the Russian side of the Caspian are not maybe... not that on the Iranian side this issue exists as well, but the idea that if we're going to have this increase of trade and relations and this back and forth, we need to work a little bit on this issue of the different
quite right.
ports in the Caspian. If you could, please.
Yes, I completely agree with you. And recently there was also, when Mr. Novak was here, the governor of Astrakhan region, Mr. Babushkin, and a few days ago he hosted Mr. Fattah.
Yes.
Yeah. The chief of this Mostasefan Foundation.
Yes, yes, yes.
And we are working on that in this regard.
Okay, very good.
Also, very important is to make some technical issues, some technical works in Volga-Don Channel,
yes.
which is connecting
yes.
Black Sea and Caspian Sea.
Exactly.
That, yeah, we are working on it. Yes. Astrakhan, Olya, which is also just operated by Iranian friends.
Very good. Mr. Ambassador, we're coming to the end. If there's anything else you would like to mention that we didn't talk about, please... You have a few
I would
minutes.
Like only to respect my to express my respect to the friendly Iranian people. I know that we are now Russia and Iran in a difficult position as a result of the sanctions, but we will overcome all these problems, all the difficulties, working together. All the best and best regards, best wishes to the friendly Iranian people.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador. Thank
you
for joining
much.
Us.
Thank you.
Until the next time.
Thank you.
Thank you. So what insight did we gain from our conversation with Ambassador Jagarian? It's clear that the Western reactions, sanctions, and general hostility to all things Russian following the war in Ukraine have not isolated Russia, but have in fact resulted in Russia strategically reorienting itself towards Asia and the global South and away from the West. Russia is putting all its energy in cultivating the relations it has with major Asian powers such as China, India and Iran, as well as the relations it has with countries in Africa and Latin America. Relations with the U.S. is clearly a closed matter for the foreseeable future, but it seems that Russia has not completely given up on Europe, expressing the hope that the leaders there will eventually come to their senses and defend their own national interests instead of blindly following the U.S. and pushing their societies off the precipice. Citing Hungary as a positive example of a country that puts its national interests before subservience to the U.S. In terms of Iran-Russia relations, it is entering a new strategic era in all areas, with the focus on the expansion of economic relations and trade, the use of national currencies for trade, and the eventual replacement of the dollar with a new international trade currency. We are moving towards the post-American era, and a new world order where Russia will be an important pillar. It seems that with every passing day, we are getting closer to Zbigniew Brzezinski and America's nightmare of the strategic alignment of Russia, Iran, and China, due in part to America's own irrational and short-sighted policies and strategies. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Until the next time on Insight. We'll be right back.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, I'm Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll try to discuss the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وما يأتيهم من ذكر من الرحمن محدث إلا كانوا عنه معرضين.
And no revelation comes to them anew from the Most Merciful except that they turn away from it.
فَقَدْ كَذَّبُوا فَسَيَأْتِيهِمْ أَنْبَاءُ مَا كَانُوا بِهِ يَسْتَهْزِئُونَ.
For they have already denied, but there will come to them the news of that which they used to ridicule.
Dear listeners, as you have been previously with us, we were discussing these verses of chapter Shu'ara. The fifth verse says, وَمَا يَأْتِيهِمْ مِنْ ذِكْرٍ مِنَ الرَّحْمَنِ مُحْدَثٍ إِلَّا كَانُوا عَنْهُ مُعْرِضِينَ. Never comes there to them a new reminder from the Beneficent, but they turn away from it. فَقَدْ كَذَّبُوا فَسَيَأْتِيهِمْ أَنْبَاءُ مَا كَانُوا بِهِ يَسْتَهْزِئُونَ. So they have indeed rejected it, therefore the news of that which they used to mock shall soon come to them. As mentioned before, these couple of verses are mentioning the different attributes of the pagans, their aversion, their denial, and their derision. So this path towards hellfire starts with ignoring and disliking the truth, then denying it, and finally derision and making mock of it. And this is the worst attribute of man, ridiculing the truth. Before we get into the discussion of the sixth verse, let us have a look at some of the points that can be understood from the fifth one. The fifth verse says, مَا يَأْتِيهِمْ مِنْ ذِكْرٍ مِنَ الرَّحْمَنِ مُحْدِثٍ. This means that the Holy Quran has been sent gradually and step by step, different verses being sent one at a time. The verse also says, ذِكْرٍ مِنَ الرَّحْمَنِ, reminder from the Beneficent. This is one of the blessings of the Almighty Allah that has signs and reminders for every nation and ummah at any time. This is one of the perpetual blessings of the Lord. And this dhikr, this muhdath dhikr, that is a new reminder, is somehow completing the argument and hujjah against those disbelievers and somehow polytheist. So, religion and Allah is the reason for the awareness of the people. But instead of turning to the truth, some people mu'aradin, but they turn away from it. And now, in this verse, the sixth one, it is added, implying that they do not get satisfied with aversion, They begin to deny and then they start to do something worse than that, which is scoffing at the revelations. So it is said, فَقَدْ كَذَّبُوا فَسَيَأْتِهِمْ أَنْبَاءُ مَا كَانُوا بِهِ يَسْتَهْزِئُونَ. So they have indeed rejected it, and therefore the news of that which they used to mock shall soon come to them. We'll be back with the points of this verse after a short break. على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qum.
So, about the sixth verse, the Quranic word أَنْبَاءَ فَسَيَأْتِيهِمْ أَنْبَاءُ مَا كَانُوا بِهِ يَسْتَهْزِئُونَ is the plural form of the word نَبَأَ that means important news. Its purpose here is those severe punishments which will be imposed on these pagans and polytheists, both in this world and hereafter. Some commentators believe that these punishments are limited to the punishments of hereafter, but also there are some other commentators believing that the concept of the verse is somehow general. This cannot be limited. The verse and the words used in this verse are absolute, and the punishments are also for this life too, because paganism, denial of the truth, this has got an extensive, terrible effect on the entire aspects of life of man. So this kind of punishment cannot be ignored. Anyway, when we have a look at these three verses altogether, the fourth up to sixth one, we understand that they are showing that when man is on deviated paths, he gets increasingly far away from the truth. First, it is the phase of aversion. He turns away from the truth. He starts being heedless to it. Then, gradually, man begins to deny, to reject the truth. And then he even gets further than this stage and starts to mock the truth. Then it will be time for divine punishment. And this is what we understood from these couple of verses. The last point to be mentioned regarding this very sixth verse is that there will be a certain response for those who ridicule the truth and the followers of the truth, either in this world or hereafter. Either in this world or hereafter, or even in Barzakh, they will see the results of their wicked acts in this world. That said, dear listeners, we have, I assume, completed our discussion about these couple of verses. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
Keeping the occasion in mind, I would like to talk about the importance of imamat in the context of Ghadir. Whether this is essential part of the faith or not, or is it one of the furu'at? Does it come under usul-e-deen or under furu'd-deen? And just to, you know, keeping the time in mind, I would just like to concentrate on the event of Ghadir. Because the question comes up, you know, is really the event of Ghadir that important for us? Was it a divine appointment of the vicegerency of Amir al-Mu'mineen? Or was it just a wish of the Prophet out of his intense love for his cousin and his son-in-law? That's what we are told. That he was probably not making that as a legislation or a law. This was just his desire. If Muslims followed, that's good. If not, it's okay. And this is where we have to realize, you know, just to do this, we are not, I'm not even going to hadith or to history. Just look at ayat number 67 of Surah Maida, the fifth chapter of the Quran, which was revealed in connection to the event of Ghadir. I don't want to give you a long list of references, but I can assure you that in the research done by Allama Amini rahmatullah alayh, in his famous book Al-Ghadir, in the very first volume, he actually talks about the revelation of this ayat, Ya ayyuhar rasul balligh ma unzila ilayka min rabbik. This ayat number 67 of Surah Maidah, he gives 30 references from the Sunni scholars that this was revealed in Ghadir. Very quickly, just the names of some of the important figures here. You know, Tabari in his Kitab al-Vilaya, narrating from Zayd bin Arqam. Hafiz Razi, quoted by Suyuti, says that, you know, this is the narration which comes from Abu Sa'id al-Khudri. Al-Hafiz Mahamili in his Amali talks about this ayat being revealed in Ghadir. Hafiz Abu Bakr al-Shirazi says the same thing. Hafiz Ibn Mardaway also gives three narrations by three prominent Sahaba about this ayat coming in Ghadir. Then we have Tha'labi Nishapuri in his Tafsir, Al-Kashf al-Bayan, says the same thing. Hafiz Abu Nu'aym al-Isfahani. Then Wahidi al-Nishapuri in his book Asbab al-Nuzul, which talks about the occasions when the ayat were revealed, says the same thing from Abu Sa'id al-Khudri. Then you have Sajistani, and finally the last name I'll give here, just 10, first 10 out of the 30, is Hakim Haskani in Shawa'idh al-Tanzil, where he quotes Abdullah ibn Abbas and Jabir al-Ansari. And if you look at just these 10, you know, sources, the companions who connected this ayat to Ghadir are very prominent ones. Zayd bin Arqam is a very senior Sahabi. Abu Sa'id al-Khudri, about whom the Prophet said that the sky has not shadowed anyone more truthful, and the earth has not, you know, lifted anyone more truthful than Abu Sa'id al-Khudri. And this is where, you know, we talk about Abu Sa'id al-Khudri and many others, Abdullah ibn Abbas, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, then Jabir ibn Ansari. And these are the prominent Sahaba that we have. Now, going back to the ayat itself, and just look at the ayat, and that will show you the importance of the concept of vilayat and imamat in Islam. When you look at the ayat, look at the tone and the style used by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Again, ayah 67 from Surah Maidah. The very first thing, the way Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala addresses the Prophet, it is very formal, very official. No more Habib and Mahbub. You know that concept. You know, normally when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala talks to the Prophet more in an informal kind of a personal way, he says Yasin, Taha, Muzammil, Mudassir, and things like that. No, here it's a very formal style. Ya ayyuhar rasul. Muhammad, this is a very serious matter. It is between me, Rabbul Alameen, and you, my Rasul. You are the messenger here. He doesn't even use the words Ayyuhan Nabi. He has used that 13 times in the Quran. But there is a difference. Nubuwwat basically talks about the relationship between the person and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that the Nabi is in communication with Allah. He gets the news from him. Whether it is wajib for him to convey to others, no. And Nabi is the source of guidance. People go and ask him and he will guide them. Whereas Rasul is somebody who is told that I'm giving you the information and the message, it is your duty to go out and convey that to the people. And so even the choice of words, Ya Ayyuha Rasul, is very important here. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, this is not just a, you know, I'm giving you some information about Ali or his wilayat and imamat. No, you are being designated here as a Rasul, the messenger. And it is your duty to deliver this message about the wilayat of Ali. Salawat Quran Akbar. Ya Ayyuha Rasul, Balligh. Balligh is a command form of the word, from tabligh, to deliver something, to convey something. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is giving a command here. It's not a matter of choice for Rasulullah. This is the command from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Balligh, convey. And that is the meaning of tabligh. And this word itself, this one single word, balligh, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is commanding Rasulullah to convey the message, to deliver the message that I have sent to you, this rejects this speculation that we see among some these days, that oh, wilayat and imamat of Ali was only Rasulullah's wish and preference, not a formal instruction given to him by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. No, here Allah is saying, Ya Ayyuha Rasul, you are my messenger, deliver this message. And it's not that the Sahaba those days in that audience understood that, well, this is his wish, we'll see whether we want to follow it or not. Among the Sahaba, one is Abdullah ibn Abbas. I mentioned his name earlier about his narration from many sources that he's saying this ayat was revealed in Ghadir. And he's not only a Sahabi, he's known to be very learned even among Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. He's known as Hibrul Ummah, ink of the Ummah. And so the Hibrul Ummah, the way he understood, according to Ibn Mardaway, he says, فَوَجَبَتْ بِاللَّهِ فِي رِقَابِ الْقَوْمِ. This message that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is asking the Prophet to deliver to the people, فَوَجَبَتْ, it is an obligation, وَاللَّهِ, by Allah, on the people. Salawat wa akbar. And what was the message? We still haven't finished the ayat. Ya ayyuha ar-rasul balligh, or the messenger, convey the message, deliver the message which has been given to you. What was the message? Well, he gathered them in Ghadir. Those who had gone ahead, they were told to come back. Those who were lagging back, they were, you know, told to move far forward. We do not exaggerate, nor we do go back. We are right in the middle there. If you go ahead, you will become ghali. If you stay back, you will become muqassir. So Rasulullah says, those who are gone there, come back. Those who are far, move forward, come to me. And then that's where he gives the khutbah, where he says that my life is coming to the end. And when a person is coming to the end of his life, what does he do? He says, I want to make sure that the process of succession is understood clearly. That was the message. Ya ayyuha ar-rasul, balligh ma unzila ilayka min rabbik. Abdullah bin Mas'ud, a very prominent sahabi of Rasulullah, He is one of those considered to be the one who compiled the ayat of Quran in the formal way they talk about it. And Abdullah bin Mas'ud actually is the one who says, he explains this ayat. What was the message? He says the ayat is saying, Ya ayyuhar rasul, balligh ma unzila ilayka min rabbik, inna aliyan waliyul mu'minin. We are not saying that, you know, these words were removed from the ayat of Quran. Abdullah bin Mas'ud is explaining. This is an explanatory, you know, tafsir of the Quran.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Matin شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا
عليه in the limelight.
In Britain, a National Union of Students survey has found a third of all university students are left with £50 a month to live on after paying for rent and bills. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian columnist Sophie Zeldin O'Neill. The piece is titled 1 in 10 Students Turn to Food Banks in Cost of Learning Crisis. In Britain, more than 1 in 10 students are using food banks because they cannot make ends meet during the cost of living crisis, according to a new survey by the National Union of Students, the NUS. The poll of more than 3,500 university students found that 11% of students are using food banks, up from 5% in January, while 96% are cutting back as a result of soaring prices and bills. 1 in 5 say they are unable to buy toiletries and 1 in 10 cannot purchase sanitary products when required. It was reported last month that there has been a 3,000% increase in the number of graduates who owe more than £100,000 in student loan debts. In 2016, the Sutton Trust charity found that British university graduates have the highest debt in the English-speaking world, and the average loan balance has risen since then. The National Union of Students survey found that a third of all university students are living on less than £50 a month after paying their rent and bills, with many reporting that their maintenance funds are not enough to pay for a weekly shop, allow them to travel to university, or cover their energy bills. The poll also revealed a cost of learning crisis, as three-quarters of university students said they would be unable to pay for course materials without more support. 4 in 10, or 42%, say they're unable to make it on the university campus. 4 in 10, or 42%, say they're unable to make it on to university campus or are being forced to travel less, and 41% are neglecting their health so they can save money by missing out on extras such as dental appointments. 9 in 10 or 92% say the crisis is affecting their mental health, with 31% of university students saying rising costs are having a major impact. Only a fifth of university students say they have received any government support, and only 8% said they felt ministers are doing enough to support them. More than 8 in 10 or 83% have sought financial support through other means, such as using credit cards, buy now and pay later credit schemes, such as Klarna, or taking out bank loans. More than half, or 53% of university students say they have turned to family and friends for support, while 40% have reached out to them for loans. According to the new National Union of Students survey, a third of students say the rising cost of living has also had an impact on their families. Students with caring responsibilities and disabilities, those who are estranged from their families and people from poorer backgrounds, have all been affected more by the cost of living crisis. A National Union of Students spokesperson said, "Huge increases in the price of bills, price of food and living costs, coupled with soaring rent, has students on the brink. We're seeing stress and anxiety piling on them from bouncing debt between different cards to stay afloat." Despite all of this, students are being completely ignored by the government. These findings are bleak. We're knee-deep in a cost-of-learning crisis that would affect the poorest students the hardest. The National Union of Students has called on the government to put in place a tailored cost of living support package for university students, as well as requesting that student maintenance provisions and the apprentice minimum wage be brought into line with the living wage. Meanwhile, union leaders have warned newly appointed cabinet ministers that many teachers and nurses will quit their professions in the coming weeks if public sector pay deals are further delayed by chaos at the top of the government. The decision last Thursday by Prime Minister Boris Johnson to step down as Prime Minister and a series of changes to his cabinet have left public sector workers increasingly fearful that long overdue pay rises will be pushed back to the autumn.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except him, and he has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at issues of human rights from an Islamic perspective. Now, one of the issues that we are facing today, and is being discussed throughout the world, at least from the academic perspective or from the academic arena, is what we call FOOT, which is freedom of thought, F-O-T. Now, to lose the freedom of thought is basically to lose our dignity, our democracy, our very selves. It is my thought, it is who I am. You take that away from me and I am no longer myself. I am someone else. If I can't think for myself, if someone else is doing the thinking for me, then I am literally a slave. Sometimes we have two different definitions of a slave. Sometimes you have a person who is enslaved by being cuffed to chains or by forced into labor. Sometimes now you have a person who is not in charge of his right mind of thinking. So according to the right of freedom of thought, it does itself receive absolute protection under the international human rights law. I mean, because it's a basic thing. So I don't see why it should not be a law that a person has the right to freedom of thought. However, this foundation right has been neither significantly developed nor often utilized. When we look at this human right of freedom of thought, we see that it is very blurry. It is a very thin line where, in terms of words, in terms of ideology, it's very clear. And every system that we have in the world pride themselves of, you know, providing people with the freedom to think and the freedom of thought. And they consider that as, the peril and the diamond of their own beliefs or their own democracy. But when you magnify it by a magnifying glass, and when you try to dissect this concept and look at the reality of it, you see a completely different picture. And the outside is one thing, and the inside is one thing. Where sometimes we're not only talking about this from an Islamic belief or Islamic system, or from a religious perspective at least. Because sometimes when you look at something Islamically, it holds, you know, they say, okay, it's a Muslim, it's a Christian, it's this ideology, so therefore we don't want. I could agree. Okay, I say, fine. Not agree, I say, I submit to the fact we don't want to get into that topic. Okay, but what about when it is something completely different? What is something political? What if it's something economical? What if it's something scientific? Why am I not allowed to think and to create and others are? And if I think a certain thought, for example, in terms of politics, then I am labeled and others can think whatever they want. Why is it that when I think something, there are millions of people who are trying to label me and try to deprive me of my own free thought? I mean, how is that fair? So when we dissect this notion of freedom of thought, we see that the very countries who pride themselves in it are actually against it. Now, let us take a short break and then we will continue right after.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and we are talking about human rights from an Islamic perspective. So we're looking at the freedom of thought. So me as a Muslim, or at least let's say as a human being, in terms of politics, I mean, I can form my own thoughts, can't I? I mean, if I live in a country where I am being attacked by another country, and I say that this country is invading me, and I have the right to fight them, they are terrorists. But for some reason, the entire world sees it the other way around. And then I'm the one who's labeled as a terrorist. I am the one who is labeled as a bad person, and the other occupier is labeled as the rightful owners of the land. The classical example of this is Palestine, where you have the Zionists invading a country, killing the people, and when the Palestinians people want to fight back, they are terrorists. Now, I don't want to get involved in that. But me, as a free thinker, if I want to think that the Jews or the Zionist regime is an oppressive occupiers and they are illegitimate in every sense of the word, then I am labeled as a terrorist for my thoughts. And I am fought for it because they say, no, you have it wrong. And then I am in trouble. And if I go to a Western country, I could be prosecuted for my own thoughts, which is, a problem. So I said to these nations or to these systems, I mean, where is your sense of freedom of thought that you talk about so much? So it does not work. Now, if we flip the situation, if we look at it from a different perspective, if you look at it from the Russia-Ukraine, for example, war, Russians are looked at as invaders and bad people. And the entire world is facing them, the entire world is fighting them, the entire world has sanctioned Russia and what have you. And as you can see, because they say, well, Russia has absolutely no right to invade Ukrainians. And if the Russians want to say, no, it's our rights, they consider it to be, I don't know, crazy, terrorists, or what have you. That applies to this Russia, Ukraine. But if you want to apply the same thing to Palestine, it does not work. I don't know why. Why is it that the people in Lebanon who fight for their own lands are considered terrorists? And if I support them, then I am a terrorist. Why is it that the people, for example, in Iran, when they want to fight and defend for their nation, they are labeled as terrorists, and they are even their names written in the terrorist list because they're defending their lands? And if I want to support them, at least ideologically, or at least from, thinking, I don't want to go too far. Just I want to think that these people are right. One man's army, another man's terrorist, or vice versa. Why is it I don't have that right to think such a thought or to believe such a belief? Why is it my thought is constantly being under attack? So where is this basic of a human right to thought? So when we talk about the freedom of thought, don't think of it just as a concept. As a concept, yeah, everyone accepts it. But practicing it, being applied on the outside, we see a complete different picture. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره همه این ارزش ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم امر الله سبحانه الا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being. A brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام الحدة ضرب من الجنون لأن صاحبها يندم فإن لم يندم فجنونه مستحكم